And we're back with you, and now we're going to be talking about 9/11. And we have a special guest from England, from the United Kingdom. And his name is Andrew Johnson. He grew up in Yorkshire, graduated from Lancaster University in 1986 with a degree in computer science and physics. And he became interested in 9/11 research in 2003. And I just want him to tell you his story about how he became interested in 9/11 research. Andrew, welcome to We Ourselves.
Thank you very much, Ambrose. It's a great pleasure to be with you in the morning, I guess it is over there.
Well, right now it's exactly noon here.
Ah, okay. Well, we have a saying in this country that a gentleman always says good morning until 12:30.
Okay, and a great good morning to you, Andrew.
Yeah.
how did you become interested in 9/11 research?
Well, I suppose it was kind of really with the birth of the sort of always-on internet that we had. And I think, as with many things, we tend to be a couple of years behind the sort of USA and technological states. And I got an always-on internet connection in about 2003, early 2003. And I just started downloading stuff, you know, as one does. And I first came across Dr. Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project.
Mm-hmm.
That was following a bit of research I did after watching a television program. And I kind of followed the threads which sort of seemed to spread out from that. And eventually I came across an article which talked about how in the past governments have been involved with sponsoring terrorism, you know, terrorist acts and terrorist groups as a way of kind of, you know, achieving political objectives.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never really heard of this sort of you know, way of doing things before. And it was just sort of leading out from that I then came to eventually download a video which was called 9/11, The Great Illusion. And I think it was the very title that sort of caught my attention. And what do you mean illusion? I mean, we saw everything that happened, it wasn't an illusion. And film was made by George Humphrey, who I believe is from Texas. And when I watched that film, there was a particular segment in that which I think stood out to me more than any other, and that was when it described how the Twin Towers sort of, they used the word collapse, but, you know, following Judy Wood's work, we think that that's now inaccurate. But that really set the figures out very clearly and showed to me that it couldn't possibly have been the fires which, you know, caused the destruction there.
Mm-hmm.
And once I'd seen that and realised that was what happened, I sort of sat down and I thought, well, I've got to check this because I can't really believe that somebody would have missed this. And then when I worked out the free fall time for an object falling from, you know, 1,350 feet or thereabouts, you know, I realised that these had actually come down, as the video said, at free fall rate. And, you know, I just thought, well, that obviously means that this was a false flag operation, that somebody was blamed for causing this destruction and they weren't necessarily involved, or even if they were, then, you know, they didn't cause all of the damage which they'd claimed had been caused by them.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really what sort of started me off, and I think shortly after that, I sort of got this film onto a DVD or something, and I took it out to a local pub venue and tried to do a film showing there, but it wasn't very successful.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I really thought that this was so important and nobody was really talking about it that I had to start talking about it. And so really it sort of led on from there, and I started writing a few letters, and that was in about sort of September 2004 by the time I'd got involved in doing that. And sort of wrote to my political representative, we call them MPs in this country, Member of Parliament, and sort of sent her the sort of analysis that I'd done, very simple analysis of the three fall times. And at that time, what she did, I was quite pleased with her response at that time, because she forwarded my letter to, I think it was the Home Office, and I got a response from them saying, well, you know, we just go along with the official story. And then they sent me something about Belmarsh Prison. And I don't know if anyone has heard of Belmarsh Prison. Perhaps not, because Belmarsh Prison is the British equivalent of Guantanamo Bay, where we've got, we had a thing about 11 people who had been basically locked up without trial, you know, for quite a few months, I think for sort of 6, 7, 8 months, or maybe even a year. And so that, again, this response from the Home Office to me was extremely curious, because I hadn't even asked about Belmarsh Prison. I'd mentioned that, you know, the relation of 9/11 to Guantanamo Bay, I think, but I hadn't really, I didn't even know that Belmarsh Prison existed until I got this letter back. So it's really strange, you know, that that I should get that sort of response back. And really, kind of things started to seem to follow, you know, follow a path for me from then, really. Because soon after that, I got in touch with a few other people in the UK who had also started looking at 9/11 and were realizing that the official story was completely bogus, and they were trying to do things. And there was a very good friend of mine who lives in London who's been very active in funding some of the public events and film showings that we've had over here. I already knew her through another common interest that we had had. And she then, I think, got in touch with a group of people in London. And then the biggest boost to us, really, was when Jimmy Walter came over. And Jimmy Walter came over in May 2005, and he organised, I think it was, three events. He had two in London and one in Manchester, and Manchester is another big city in this country, in the sort of north of England. And I went to the London one, and that is really when I met quite a few other people there who were also interested in forming a group or doing something. And I think it was about 3 months after that, the Jimmy Walter event in London, which was a good event. We had Eric Hufschmid and William Rodriguez, and we had Chris Berlin and Jimmy himself, and they all gave presentations. And then we basically set up soon after that an internet forum, 911.co.uk, which really became a sort of meeting point for people from all over England and Wales, and all over the world, but it's primarily in this country that people, you know, post from.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, you can pick up right where you left off, Andrew. We'll be right back. And we're back with you with our special guest, Andrew Johnson. Andrew, go right ahead.
Yes, well, we got really to summer of 2005, and we'd set up the internet forum. In fact, that was done by somebody else. I was sort of involved on the sort of fringes of doing that. But basically, we did start to try and organise other events, and around this time, some of your listeners may be familiar with a person called David Shaler. He had also sort of come into the picture. David was very active in the Stop the War movement, following his, you know, the sort of ordeal that he went through when he came out of MI5 and whistleblew on a plot which he discovered within the service to assassinate Colonel Gaddafi. And he was sort of drawn towards the 9/11 evidence to stop the war meeting, as I understand it. And he began to speak out, you know, that we knew that the Twin Towers had been destroyed with explosives or some other method. And so because he was quite well known over here, he'd had quite a long ongoing case in the press with this court case that was put against him, he eventually lived in exile for I think about a year or something in France, and then he came back, and he did actually go to prison for breaking what we have in this country, the Official Secrets Act, and he went to prison I think for a short period of time. I think it was only a matter of a few weeks he ended up serving, but he's very well known, quite notorious in some ways over here. And I think once he had kind of shown his colours as regards questioning the official story of 9/11, we were able to sort of attract some attention to some of our events. And indeed, I ended up meeting David in September 2005. And we were at a small political conference together. I was invited to this conference by a former member of the UK Green Party, and he had contacts within the Green Party, and he'd managed to get a platform at the Green Party conference, which was a small conference, maybe sort of a couple of hundred people, something like that. And I was asked to provide some technical support for showing the film on a sort of big projector and whatnot, and a DVD player that we used, and they didn't know how to work it, so they asked me, and I went along there. And that's when I first met David Shaler. And subsequent to that, I organised a showing of the Loose Change film in my local town of Derby, and I hired out one of the local cinemas. And we showed the Loose Change there, and we got about 120 people into that, because David is well known, so we knew that once we had his name on the the poster, that would attract people to it, and indeed it did, and we sort of filled the place. And so that's how I got to know David, and I sort of kept up contact with him. I actually saw him a week before last in London again, so we have kept in touch. And I think he is really quite a key figure. Yes, he'd already spoken out about false flag terrorism, and this was what the Gaddafi plot was an example of. And once he saw the 9/11 evidence, and he knew the story of the Gaddafi plot, he knew that it was basically the same type of thing, with just different clothing. And that's what really sort of switched him onto it. And so we had the event in Derby, and we got a little bit of follow-up. We got into the local papers with that, and that cost me quite a bit of money, so I'm not someone who's got an awful lot of money to continually fund things like that. Mm. But nevertheless, success is going. And I can just really continue to write letters to newspapers, lots of emails. I've got my own email sort of group of about sort of 40 or 50 people, and they used to send things out to them, and they would send me things. And basically just really carrying on with that, wrote to my MP a few more times, and that was really, just what I've been doing since that time. And then in February this year, we had, I should go back a little bit further. In September last year, 2006, we had Professor David Ray Griffin. He came over to England, and he did about three or four lectures. He did one in London, and we Belinda, my friend in London, she hired the hall for him to go and speak there, and we got about 600 people to that one. And David Shaler also spoke at that event, and another person who's been quite key in the UK, a chap called Ian Crane, also spoke at that conference too. And so we then had, the day after that, a private meeting for members of the press and journalists, and I was invited to that as well. But the people that attended that didn't really seem to kind of do anything. They asked a few questions, but they didn't really seem to sort of bite at the apple or the cherry or whatever you care to call it, and we didn't really get a lot of follow-up to that. We still were writing letters all the time and trying to get things in local papers or whatever. And really the next big event for that was when William Rodriguez came, and that was in February, and I basically organised a local venue for him to come and talk, and met with William. He actually stayed here in our house with us, and so we got about 80 people to the local event here, which for us was not bad. We got into the local papers again, we got onto the local radio stations. So it's really just all my trust has been really to get this issue exposed, make people question the the official story in whatever way I can, and open them up to it. I've also tried to do other things, like I've been out into the streets on a few days. I have a little folder with pictures showing the explosions, and I've got I've actually got a little mobile phone that can play videos on it, so I've shown people videos on my phone and asked them questions, saying, well, how do you think this happened? Tried to get them interested and get them to ask questions, with some success, but it's not been something I've done a lot. I don't have enormous amounts of time to do that because of my work and family commitments. So, that's been another front. The other things that I've been doing as well are things like making copies of discs. I give discs out a lot. I print out booklets. I've made stickers to stick on, in various places, like on buses or bus stops, this sort of thing. Anything just to get people to have a look, at the evidence and look at the websites and really start asking the questions. And really, also I've been continuing my own research into this, and finding out really what's at the bottom of it all. And that is really what got me in touch initially with the scholars group, Scholars for 9/11 Truth. And, I can talk about that as well. And that really started in December 2005. And I was invited by Professor Steve Jones, to join this Scholars for 9/11 Truth group. And at the time, I was absolutely chuffed because I thought people are actually waking up in the academic community and they're going to try and actually look at the issue and really get some good brains onto it and bring it forwards into the wider community. And this will save me doing it, So at that time, Steve Jones had come out with this thermite evidence that he'd put into this paper. And he invited me to join the scholars group, and I sent a message back to him saying, well, look, Steve, I'd like to join the scholars group, but I'd like to join as an associate member, because just to explain, although I've got a background in engineering, software engineering, actually, and I've been involved in education over the last sort of 20 years as well, I'm not, a university professor or a doctor. I do a bit of teaching. I do a bit of teaching at degree level for a correspondence course. And so although I am can be classed as a scholar, I'm not paid full-time as a scholar. I'm associated with education and involved in that sort of work. But I don't write books, I don't write research papers as such. And so that's why I asked Steve Jones, well, look, I only think, I should join as an associate rather than a full member, because I'm not a tenured professor or anything like that.
Right.
And anyway, he sent me this message back saying, well, no, but, come into the group as a full member. I mean, you didn't have to pay any membership fee or anything. It was just a loose association.
Okay. We got to take another break. When we come back, I want you to tell our listeners how you feel about what Judy Woods has done. We'll be right back.
Okay.
We're back with you with our very special guest from the United Kingdom, Andrew Johnson. And we'll take your calls at 866-801-8255. And before we ask Andrew to go on to tell us about his reaction to Judy Woods, let's go to one of our callers and see what's on his mind. This is Larry from New York. Larry, you're on.
Reverend Ambrose, good morning.
And to you.
I sent a to your guest there. I've watched sort of the whole investigation or what's been going on around 9/11, and I spent 21 years as an investigator, an investigative reporter. And the problem with what's going on is all these groups are looking from the outside in, and the story is always from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
And the question that if I wasn't driving a truck around the country and to keep my kids in college and was a newspaper reporter in New York, I think I'd have the story in 2 months. And the first thing that I don't see anybody doing is, let's just start with building number 7. We got the hypothesis that it was taken down by explosives. So if you take a diagram of that, where exactly in that building were those explosives? Would they have to be to bring down a building the way it was brought down? Who is the security company that was in charge and had those security guards around it? Where exactly were they placed, minute by minute, over the? I don't see anybody going and actually interviewing and talking to people on the inside. When you know where those explosives had, who were in office? Who saw something different? How did those explosives get in there? Those are the questions. That's how you get to the answer. Who put those explosives there? Find them rather than standing on the outskirts and looking at movies and looking at films and developing hypotheses and theories. And when you're done with that, all you got are hypotheses and theories, and you don't really have the story. No, I would say this. If I was trying to conceal what actually happened on 9/11, I would form organizations doing exactly what a lot of these 9/11 organizations are doing. They'll never get to the story because they're standing on the outside. What are the facts? Who's who? Talk to the people. Make big lists of the janitors and the people.
Okay.
Okay, yes. Well, I think, you know, the caller makes some very, very good points. And how I would basically sort of answer that, not that I can answer who did it or, you know, that I've got any inside contacts, but really you have to look at 9/11 as a whole thing and look at the total weirdness of it, because we had the NIST, group. They were supposed to produce a report for Building 7, which should have answered some of the questions which the caller was raising, and this report still hasn't been published 5 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So we then transfer the question of who is on the inside of NIST to prevent that report from coming out.
Right.
And who actually set the parameters for that report, when it was going to be put together. And again, to answer the caller's question, that, well, it really takes us directly to Judy Wood's door, doesn't it? Because as we know, Jerry Liebhardt and Judy Wood have now challenged NIST, and Ed Haas, in fact, specifically for Building 7,
mm-hmm.
they have now challenged NIST to say, why did you put in your report what you put in your report, and why do you miss these things out? So people have tried to do what the caller is suggesting, maybe not in quite the way that he says it.
Mm-hmm.
And also we don't seem to have that many true insiders that have come out. And again, to answer one of the questions that he raised, I can sort of partly answer that. From my understanding, the security company which had the contract for the World Trade Center 1 and 2, I don't know whether it extended to Building 7 as well, it may well have done, was Securicom. And that company, as I understand it, one of the shareholders was Marvin Bush, George Bush's brother, but their contract expired on September the 11th, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another item of weirdness. So again, you know, if you look at those facts, you come up against a lot of brick walls and a lot of dead ends. And, you know, I'm not an investigative writer or journalist particularly. I'm just somebody who knows that 9/11 was an inside job, and I'm trying in my own way to get the information out there to force the public bodies to answer the questions, because ultimately we have to apply pressure ourselves, write the letters, send the faxes, send the emails to say we want answers to these questions, we deserve answers to these questions. And that's precisely what Julie Wood has done, and Jerry Leapheart has done, and Morgan Reynolds too.
And what is your response to what was revealed by Judy Woods?
Yes, well, that going back a little bit away, you know, I'd got involved with Steve Jones. I exchanged a few emails with him. I helped him put together this Thermite video clip, which somebody found on the internet. And, you know, he responded with thanks, and he referenced this in part of his paper. But then I think a couple of months after that, just to sort of say how I got on to find out about Judy Wood's work, I came across a paper written by Professor Morgan Reynolds, and he actually mentioned me by name, and I was amazed, frankly. And he referenced this video clip that I'd put together on behalf of Steve Jones, so I sent an email to Morgan explaining, you know, why I'd done this. And then I realized that what he was suggesting, in terms of there was more, another level of fakery going on, and I think that he could well be correct in that this Thermite video clip, which we were given by Steve Jones, or was pointed out to us by Steve Jones, may well have been not quite real. We're really not sure. You know, we can't say one way or the other. But looking at the other evidence that has been put forward, you know, it does give us less confidence, very much less confidence in that. And then I'd heard about Judy Wood via Steve Jones's work, and I sort of investigated that a bit further. And as we know, she published what was known as the Star Wars Beam Weapon paper in October 2006. And when I looked at this, I realized that I, again, just as when I had seen the Twin Towers being described in this George Humphreys film as being, you know, falling at the freefall rate, and I'd never noticed that before, Judy's work just really graphically exposed the complete level of destruction at the World Trade Center complex. And when you look at these pictures and the selection that she's got, and you look at the other evidence there, you just boggles your mind that any type of dynamite or C4 or RDX or any other type of conventional explosives couldn't possibly have caused the damage that is documented in those pictures. So that's when I began to realize that we were looking at something really quite different. And one of the bits of evidence which I'd already seen, but not really, again, digested, with this video clip, which was on CNN, where we've got the tower has come down, has been dustified, has gone poof, as Judy so accurately says, and then we have this grid-like structure just left standing there for about 5 or 6 seconds, and you can clearly see this grid structure, and you have to ask yourself, well, what is this grid structure? Is it glass? Is it aluminium? Is it steel? Is it wood? And you go through those questions in your mind, and then it just disappears. This thing just disappears before your eyes. It just fades away, and just poof, goes away. And, you know, Steve Jones has actually described this in his interview with Jim Fetzer, and I recorded this, so I've kept this. And he just said that this thing just shakes and falls, and some people have said it was a shock wave from the collapse and all this. But this is just nonsense. I mean, there's no explosion. You know, there's no fire. This thing just disappears before your very eyes. And to me, that is one of the key pieces of evidence which says that we are looking at some type of directed energy technology. And I think at that point, when I'd really, you know, seen all the evidence, that really sort of brought me full circle.
Yeah. We're going to take another short break, and when we come back, we're going to take a call from Shawnee in New York. And stay tuned. The number to call is 866-801-8255. And we're back with our special guest, Andrew Johnson. And we're going to go directly to none other than Shawnee in New York. Shawnee, you're on. Shawnee.
Shawnee. Hello, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, this Bluetooth is not always the best. Okay. What I wanted to just, first of all, thank you for raising this issue, because I remember, you know, being there with the, when 9/11 happened, and, you know, we were all sent home from work, and I had this opportunity to sit down with my parents and really dialogue about what happened. And the fact that you're talking about this now is so funny, because these are the same things my parents raised. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of this, you know, of course, my dad, you know, my both my parents worked in the city for years, and they said, this is impossible. No building can just fall so cleanly like that.
Right.
Something is going on. And I'm glad that you're able to enlighten people about what really is going on with this country, because I think people are in denial, they are complacent, and a little ignorant to what people, what leaders in this country can do. And I wanted to ask Andrew, it is Andrew, correct?
Yes.
Yep.
I wanted to ask him, because I have all confidence that you're going to get to the bottom of this issue and what some real things are going to come out of what you're doing. What are your action steps? What do you expect to do when all of this, you know, all the information does come out?
Thank you so much, Shani.
Thank you.
Well, it kind of neatly ties in with what I was going to say next, because when I referred to coming full circle, at the beginning of the program I talked about Disclosure Project, and once I'd seen Judy Wood's paper, I thought, well, this has got to be black technology. This is something which has been developed in secret by a secret group, which is probably almost certainly part of the military-industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'd realized this, and I realized this quite quickly after seeing what Judy had done, I thought, well, this really is the key. Because if we can show people the evidence for this and explain it to them, which is exactly what the caller was saying, then they will come to realize with any luck that we've got much more advanced technology which is being used by somebody to do these terrible things. And flipping that on its back, how can we use that technology for good purposes? And I think what this is all about, particularly if you research into Steve Jones, if people are listening and they want to research into Steve Jones, I think this is all to do with energy, the energy cover-up.
Mm-hmm.
It's one segment of 9/11. The one side of it, as I've already alluded to, is the fake war on terror and all that has given us, all those terrible things. But the flip side of it is that they're covering up ways of producing limitless energy, very vast amounts of energy. And this is exactly what is one of the themes of Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project. Because of his witnesses and what they say, he said that they have got reverse engineered technology which can produce vast amounts of energy, basically for free, from nothing, without fuel. And when we can get this revealed, and I think 9/11 to me, this is what drives me, it's one of the keys in exposing 9/11 truth, is exposing the energy cover-up, the cold fusion cover-up, the Tesla cover-up. All these things have been covered up. And when we can expose these things and get people to realize that they are real and get them to ask and say, why don't we have access to these things, then we're going to have a chance of really changing this sort of path that we're on now, which doesn't, to me, look particularly good at the moment. So that really is the whole thrust of my direction and my ultimate aim, really.
Okay. Let's go to John in California. John, you're on.
Thank you, Reverend Ambrose. Appreciate it. I was going to say, if we would view this as returning to the scene of a crime, that a criminal always returns to the scene of a crime,
mm-hmm.
we would treat 9/11 as a criminal act of mass murder.
Yep.
Who returned to the scene of the crime? President Bush, Mayor Giuliani, and people like James Woods, who ended up playing Mayor Giuliani in a movie. In other words, they created all the alibis and all the scenarios that we're being asked to believe, and yet Mayor Giuliani stored tons and tons of diesel fuel in that Building 7 against the wishes of the Fire Department of New York. And what he was covering up with the destruction of that building is anybody's guess. But obviously, there's more to this than what we've been told.
Mm-hmm.
Also, There was 4,000 Israelis working the World Trade Center on an ordinary day. They had jewelry businesses and so on, import-export businesses. None showed up for work that day. And yet the Jerusalem Times reported, as their headline, 4,000 Israelis killed at World Trade Center catastrophe. They had somehow been given the word, don't go to work that day. They didn't lose one Israeli that day. So there's obviously more to this than what we're being told. I'm glad this man Andrew is looking into it further. That's all I wanted to say on the matter.
Okay, thank you so much, John.
I take care.
Okay, you want to finish what you were saying about Judy?
Yes, well, I think just to quickly reference what Carl said, the Israeli thread is one that does run through 9/11, and, you know, you can research that for yourselves, really. There's a lot to do with that. But, yes, I mean, going back to things like the energy cover-up and what Judy has said, again, I look at this phrase, you know, who benefits, qui bono, and flip that on its head. In other words, who haven't benefited? And I think it's quite clear when you do look at the facts that Judy and people like her have not benefited from her research. Indeed, they've been, you know, threatened quite severely. And as some of your listeners may be aware, one of her students was murdered at the time they were sort of investigating some of the aspects of what Steve Jones had written. And, you know, is it unrelated?
And then she was warned that the same thing could happen to her.
Exactly. So, you know, when you look at things like this and you look at what's happened, you know, I referred to briefly to the Cold Fusion cover-up. There's a very interesting person who I have a great deal of respect for, and that's Dr. Eugene Mallov. And he was also murdered when he was about to present some of his findings with these alternative free energy technologies. We're not talking about hydrogen cars or solar power or this sort of thing. We're talking about energy from the vacuum or energy from water, which is limitless, potentially. And he was also murdered in May 2004, just before he was about to give his findings to a congressional hearing, as I understand it. So you can see these sorts of threads running through, and so when people are looking at this, look who hasn't benefited, who, as well as who has benefited. And again, I myself haven't benefited any from this. You know, it's something I do because I feel it needs to be done. You know, I don't make any money from it. I don't sell any books or, you know, things like that. So, you know, it's something that people should look out for. And I have the deepest admiration for what Judy has done, and the way she's really, you know, kept her ship, as it were, going across the sea in the right direction. And some of the listeners may be aware that she has now challenged somebody at Kirtland Air Force Base to comment on the use of a directed energy weapon in the destruction of the World Trade Center, because there is a big directed energy weapons research organization which is based at Kirtland Air Force Base. And so she's written to this person and challenged them to comment. I don't know what the outcome has been, but to me, this is a very important part of the process, in that we are sending a signal to these people that even if they don't reply to us, we are at least saying, we're looking at this now and we're very unhappy and we've got a lot of questions we want you to answer. And, you know, and as ordinary citizens, you know, we feel you have a duty to answer them honestly. And I think really that's what I encourage everyone to do, is to ask, you know, the questions that they feel need answering in any way that they can think of, and get these people to the point where they know that, you know, we know, and we're going to keep asking the questions.
Thank you so much, Andrew. Andrew, you keep spreading the word in the United Kingdom and maybe in other parts of Europe so that the people will finally get the truth. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It's been great to be with you. Thank you.
Always. And now we are coming to the last of our show. And this has been We Ourselves. I'm Ambrose Eileen Sr. And, of course, our program director is Lee Michaels. Our assistant producer is B.J. Johnson and Daryl Green. And our producer is Ralph Cooper.